This is the Mile High Five podcast with Carl Jensen and Doug Cunnington. We have authentic conversations about the journey to Phi, health, happiness, and some very odd tangents. We interview Phi experts, side hustlers, people on their way to Phi, and those who have reached the other side. Join us every week, and if you want the show notes and links and all that other stuff, head over to milehighfi.com.
Hello, world. Welcome to the Mile High Fi podcast. I'm Carl Jensen with my co-host.
I'm Doug Cunnington.
And today on the show, we have BJ, who is a retired Air Force officer. He retired from the military about 2 years ago and bought a fancy car. And this is one of the first things I learned about him. BJ has already done one of my bucket list items, which I think is pretty awesome. We'll talk about that a little bit later. Like so many of us, BJ became interested in financial independence in his childhood. So today we're going to talk about why people in the military are set up so well for FIRE, why a lot of people in the military don't take advantage of the benefits. One of the best ways to kick off retirement, it doesn't suck if you have a Lamborghini on the Pacific Coast Highway, spoiler alert, the biggest issues with achieving your dreams, and so much more. So BJ, you are financially independent, but you still work. What do you do?
What do I do? So, well, I'm a physician. But let me step back a little bit. So that was not the initial plan. I grew up on the East Coast, out in Maryland, obviously went to high school. Both my parents were retired Army officers. So I grew up in the Army, essentially. But in the DC area, it wasn't really what I would consider a military town. You know, it's much more cosmopolitan, suburbia. So I think I didn't have that similar experience that some military brats have, and we didn't move after I was 5 years old. So that was somewhat, I was somewhat settled compared to most, I think, military brats. Anyway, like most kids, went to high school, trying to figure out what the heck you want to do with the rest of your life, and had no idea. Always loved planes and saw how well the military worked out for my parents because they retired mid-80s. I was in high school. Was I in high school? No. Still in middle school, elementary school, I think, when they first retired and started their second careers. And I'm like, hey, this, they look pretty comfortable, worked out pretty good for them. Asked them, they seem pretty happy. I'm like, huh, okay, well, applied for the military academies. So ended up getting into all three military academies, Naval Academy, West Point, Air Force Academy, and then had some other scholarships for engineering type schools, University of Maryland, a couple other schools like in New Jersey or whatever, but chose to go to the Air Force Academy because I went out there, did a summer scientific seminar, learned how to build rockets. For like 2 weeks, you go out there, you stay in the dorms, learn how to build rockets, you take physics classes, and I'm like, man, this is pretty cool. So you see all the facilities, and of course, again, when you've got fighter jets and you're like a 17 or 16-year-old boy, who likes cars too, things that go fast, it was a pretty easy sell. So decided to go out there, ended up majoring in aeronautical engineering. And that was my plan. I got my pilot's license in my freshman year of college, majored in aeronautical engineering, was planning on being a test pilot. And then one of my good friends from high school, her sister came down with a terminal illness. She had a recurrence of her cancer that she had had early in her life and ended up passing away at 15. And I actually had the opportunity, if you want to call it that, to go home and spend some time with her and her family literally the week before she passed away, and watching her on home hospice and some of the things her family went through and not being able, or having the feeling of not being able to do anything to help her while she was going through some struggles, led me to want to go into medicine. So pediatric hematology oncology is what I initially wanted to go into. And that's why I went into or switched from engineering, still majored in engineering, but switched into medicine. So left the academy, went to medical school in the East Coast at the military medical school, which again was awesome. Military paid for it. Actually got a paycheck while I was there. Had some great experiences while I was in school. Came out, went into pediatrics for a year. Realized that I'm a little burned out on school. Not sure if pediatrics was right for me. So left there and went and became a flight doc. So flew in the backseat of F-15s and F-16s, which again, not so bad when you're a 25-year-old testosterone-driven guy who likes fast cars. So did that for 3 years and then actually went overseas, flew in the backs of F-16s for a year, and then went and continued my education, did radiology for 4 more years. And then anyway, served as a radiologist and did some other things in the Air Force before retiring 2 years ago. And forgive me, what was your initial question? What did you?
We said, "What's your name?" And then you started. No, it's all good. This is great though. It gives us a full background. One observation I have is you changed your path, and you did that several times. You're like, "I'm kind of interested in this," and then you realized, "Oh, this is not quite right." Sometimes people have the sunk cost really sticks with them, that bias, and they'll. I mean, I did that. I was like halfway through computer engineering, and I was like, this kind of sucks. I feel like I was stuck. Yeah. But it sounds like maybe you knew how to deal with those struggles, because I'm sure you had the same sort of issues, but you were able to switch gears. So can you talk about that?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And this kind of, I guess, lends itself to the question of why the military, right? And what are the benefits, which if we don't talk about now, we'll talk about definitely a little bit later. There are some benefits and drawbacks, right? The military is like a very interested parent, right? That doesn't let you get too far out of the boundaries of what's acceptable, right? But won't let you do sometimes some of the things that maybe you really want to do that might get you in trouble. So the military provides a safety net, right? So being in school and wanting to change from doing engineering, still major in engineering, but then going to medical school, I knew I had a job because I had to serve in the military after I got out of college for 5 years. Likewise, one of the things, and this is one of the benefits, I talked to some folks who are thinking about going into medicine, thinking about joining the military, is how do you know what you want to do for the rest of your life, right? So I think a lot of college students have this question, how do I know what I want to be, right? And sometimes it's hard when you go too far down one path to kind of back up and go down this other thing that really interested you, but that sunk cost of like, I don't want to lose all the work I've put in and I can make a good income. Well, maybe I'll just do this other thing sometime later. So again, with the military, having done pediatrics for a year and then saying like, I'm not sure that's what I want to do. They're like, well, you've got a job because we're not going to let you go, right? There are some options moving on, doing flight medicine, which to me was awesome. And it gave me those essentially 3 years to figure out what I wanted to do when I grew up, right? Gave me time to see some medicine, some actual clinical medicine, talk to a bunch of docs who were in the military, because at that time I still was going to owe a significant amount of time for the education that I had been given up to that point. And I feel like I could make a much more educated decision. So I had the safety of the military that allowed me to change paths, feel secure in what I was doing, and move forward. So
super cool. I have a couple of follow-up questions for you. I thought you said, BJ, and maybe I misheard you, that you flew in the backseat of F-16s. I thought F-16s were a single pilot. Was this a specially outfitted one, or
no,
am
definitely.
I wrong?
No. So there are, you are correct that the operational F-16s, and I'm dating myself now because a lot of the planes are now like F-22s and F-23s, but yeah, so most of the operational F-16s are single-seaters, right? And then with the F-15s, you've got your single-seater air-to-air combat, but then you also have the F-15E Strike Eagles that where you have a backseat guy who's or a woman, right, who's operating the weapon systems. However, there are what we call tubs, right? So there's a D model. These be D models, F-16Ds, F-15Ds, that they use primarily for training. So a lot of the training bases like Luke Air Force Base and a couple other places, you want to have the instructor pilot in the plane with the pilot who's learning, right? So those were the ones we would fly in. We would fly in the two-seat D models. And the reason why is not like, hey, you know, we like you. You want to fly in the back of a super performance fighter jet. Our job really was to take care of pilots. So I happen to be assigned to a fighter squadron, and it's important to know what their job is, so when they come see you, you know if they can perform it safely. Right. So if I don't know what they use their right hand or left hand for, or what finger to, you know, actuate a certain weapon or whatever, right? It makes it a little bit harder to either keep them in the cockpit when they get an injury or take them out, because I'm like, hey, you're not going to be safe, right? Like that's my job. F-16s fly by wire. F-15 is a lot different. Like literally you have to like raise a leg and like push the stick all the way under your leg to get full deflection of some of the control surfaces. But it was an amazing experience.
Wow, that's super cool. And I have one more question for you. You told me a funny story at Economy. And I think it went something like this. You took the MCAT, but you would never take an organic chemistry. So you just, how did that work? How do you, like, I took organic chemistry. I can tell you about cyclohexane, and that's a big part of the test. That's like a weed out class for medical school. How did you take the MCAT without taking organic chemistry?
Again, dating myself, right? So I have no idea what's on the MCATs now, right? But this is back 1994, maybe 1993, four, somewhere in there. Again, like I told you, I was on this path to go do engineering. So all of my classes were set up, my 300 and 400 level classes for junior year, senior year, to have me graduate as an aeronautical engineer, go to pilot training, be a test pilot or whatever. When this experience happened with my family friend, I was like, okay, how do I make this change? Well, this is the path to become a doctor. Okay, well, you got to do organic chemistry. You have your prereqs. Luckily, at the Air Force Academy, our core classes, even for English and history majors, include a bunch of engineering classes, right? To include physics, I think. So most of the prereqs are handled, but organic is not one of those prereqs that an aeronautical engineering major would take. So I put it in my schedule, but I needed to do the MCAT before I would be able to take that class. So I actually had this discussion not long ago with some other people who are looking at getting into not even medicine, but other things like that require LSATs or GREs or whatever, the review courses you can take. So I think there's like Princeton Review. It used to be at the time there was Princeton Review and Kaplan course. I took the Kaplan course that was offered on campus at the Academy for that reason. I was like, I need to get my MCATs before I take organic chemistry. I think I'm a smart guy. I can probably learn most of what I need to know. And if nothing else, learn how to guess. So, and people are like, what? I'm like, yeah, they just want to see you can successfully complete whatever it takes to get through the door. Right. And if you can do that, I don't even care what the school is. Usually whatever you're doing, they can train you to do whatever needs to be done. So, yeah. So I learned how to guess while taking the Kaplan course. Obviously did well enough. And, remember absolutely nothing about organic chemistry to this day.
Yeah.
Nice.
And just to be clear, so learn how to guess in that you could eliminate like one answer.
Exactly.
And then you're right. Like, okay, my odds just went up.
Right.
By
right.
A huge
Should amount. There be a hydroxyl group on this answer? No. Okay. Well, you know, you can usually get
okay.
down to, yeah, yeah, you know, and.
So you did all right.
Oh, yeah.
That's
yeah,
great.
Yeah. It was fine. It was good.
Carl, were you a pretty good test taker or what's your?
Yeah, I was. I never took the MCAT. I took the PCAT, but I didn't really study. I studied a lot for my classes, so I got a top 10% on that sucker without doing any preparation. Meh.
Oh,
I don't know. It got me into a bad career path, which I later dropped out of, but oh well.
So you retired from the military a couple of years ago.
Correct.
And typically officers put in 20 years, is that right? And then you're able to retire. Fill in the gaps, because that's my loose understanding.
Yeah, yeah. So especially when it comes to, and this will kind of trickle into the financial independence side of things and how I think the military sets us up very well for that or not. So we have a cliff retirement, right? You do 20 years, you get your pension. You do 19, you don't get your pension, right? Which I've seen, right? So people that sometimes have some medical issues in the last 5 years of their 20 years plan service that sometimes are forced to retire sooner than they want. And that can negatively impact their financial plan. However, so my plan was always to be in 20 years or more, which is why I accumulated a significant amount of time I needed to pay back, right? So for the Air Force Academy, it was 5 years payback. For the military medical school I went to, it was an additional 7 years of payback. And then for the residency I did, it was 4 more years of payback. All of those years have to be served outside of educational environments, right? So the 5 years of radiology residence, the 4 years of medical school, and the 4 years of undergrad don't count towards the payback of all of those years. So it ended up, I mean, I was planning on being in anyway, so it wasn't that big of a deal. But yeah, once you retire, and it's not just the commissioned officers. So non-commissioned officers, the enlisted individuals, also after 20 years of service are entitled to or have earned a pension. It's changed a little bit over the years. So the way it was set up previously on the legacy system is you earned 2.5 years of your base pay, your base salary as a pension once you retired, right? So if you stuck around for 30 years, you got 75%, 2.5 times 30. Is that right? I think so. Of your base salary, which is important because a lot of your salary is actually made up by other entitlements, housing allowance, a subsistence allowance, those types of things, those do not get included into your retirement or to your pension. But it was a 2.5% multiple. But one thing they realized in the last decade or so is that a good number, and I forgot what the actual percentage is, but a good number of people that join the military don't actually stick around until 20 years. And a lot of times you're doing those individuals a disservice by not giving them something, let them walk away from the military with something other than maybe an education or some skill they've learned. So the BRS or blended retirement system, which is in effect now, and I think the majority of people that come in or good number of people that are still in the military will fall under the BRS system, is instead of 2.5% per year, it's 2% or 2% per year of service. But what they do is within the 401k option, which is called Thrift Savings Plan for military, also federal government members, they will have a matching system, right? So at least if you don't stay, hopefully you did the TSP, hopefully you were eligible and earned some matching money that you can walk away from your many years sometimes of service without, you know, necessarily a pension.
And your payback for the various schooling, mm-hmm. what was the total number of years that you put in or were you required to put in?
Yeah, so you're making me do math now. Okay. So let's see. So
it's like 26 or yeah, something
so,
like that, right?
So the other thing is they didn't count. So, and it's a little unique for physicians. I graduated from the academy in 1996. I finished med school in 2000. So my classmates that finished the academy in 96, their years of service that counted towards retirement started in 96, right? But because of the medical school I chose to go to where I went, the way it works, my years of service did not start until 2000. So essentially we started, those of us that went to my medical school, we graduated as O3s, as captains. We started as O3s with less than 2 years of service, which also put us lower on the pay scale because my other classmates that graduated in 96 had 5 years or 4 years of service for higher pay. And then you start from there, right? So I started in 2000. I had owed, at that point, I owed 5 years for the Air Force Academy. I owed 7 years for medical school. So 12 years is what I owed, right? So at that point, if I wanted to get out, I could have got or separated mm-hmm. at, what is that, 2012. However, you're required to do an internship. Again, education doesn't count towards payback. So let's call it 2013. And then when I went back and did four more years of radiology training, that then bumped it back even more. Four more years, right? So instead of being 2013, it's now 2017, I think, when I could have got out. But then, oh yeah, also when I did those 4 years of radiology training, I didn't do it in a military institution. So I accrued four more years that I owed, right? So instead of 2017, it was 2021. So even though I graduated the academy in 96, I couldn't retire. I actually couldn't even separate because I owed time until 2021. I actually ended up retiring, what, end of 2021, I think, something like that.
Okay, so, got it. So you retired then, and back to our original question. So yeah. We went on a long roundabout. Yeah. So currently you're still working.
I am.
And what do you do right now?
So I am a radiologist in a state other than the one that I live in. and everybody, so I work up in Alaska. And my home is in the DC area. However, I commute back and forth. And everybody was like, well, why would you do that? One of the reasons I retired is I missed being a physician. So as you accrue rank or earn rank in the military, you are offered opportunities. Always be cautious when that word pops up. If someone says there's an opportunity, it is a double-edged sword sometimes. So, and it was, right? So I had the opportunity to lead different organizations. However, I missed being a physician, right? And it's hard to carve out that clinical time when doing administration. So part of the reason I retired is I wanted to go back and do clinical work. Upon retirement, looked at some job opportunities, and a buddy of mine worked in a practice up in Alaska and said, hey man, this is a great opportunity. You might be interested. So before I retired, flew up there, took a look at the practice. The majority of the group is prior military, many members have prior military service. Felt great culturally speaking. All I had to do was be a doc, and it was awesome, right? And I think the majority of us get into medicine for altruistic purposes, not for the money. Right. Although it does usually end up being very rewarding financially, most of us you know, no one says, I want to do all these years of training just so I can get a bigger paycheck, right? If that really is your goal, go into business, go be a stock picker or do something else. But it allowed me to not only get financially rewarded, which I do now, right, more so than I did in the military, but I feel like I provide a necessary service to patients and other providers. And it's just, it's awesome, right? So yeah, I'm financially independent, but I get extreme amounts of enjoyment from my job, which then lends itself to the other question of, well, when do you quit? Right? Like if you truly enjoy what you're doing, and let's be honest, it's still a job, right? There are times where I'm like, this is bull, you know, whatever. Yeah. I don't want to be here. But yeah, that's where I'm at now, which we can, you know, discuss later. But that's how I ended up in Alaska, mm-hmm. sort of part-time, yeah.
Cool, fun benefit. It's why you're here, right?
So it is.
You commute back and forth, you have the option to fly to different places.
It is, yeah.
And you were like, oh, I'll swing down to Colorado, visit yeah. some stuff, and check it out.
Yeah, so, yeah, yeah, here. Yeah. And I think we kind of talked about this, or we were going to talk about it later, but I got into FIRE, into, I guess, this FI community during my last duty station in Ohio, right? And for whatever reason, like there's lots of folks in Ohio. People move, whether it's real estate, you can get, you know, back in the day, you know, low interest rates, you can rent, you buy rentals, do whatever, cost of living is low, you can make a lot and, you know, save a lot, whatever. So I just happened to be in Ohio when Diana did her first economy and I heard about this thing. But even before that, and the reason I heard about that is the movie Playing with Fire was coming out and they were doing a screening, or, you know, I think they had several different movie theaters throughout the country. They were going to actually show yeah. Playing with Fire. And I saw this somewhere on Facebook or something. I was like, oh, okay. I've never done anything in the FIRE community. Let me run down here. It's an hour away, sit in this theater with a bunch of people that are just as weird as I am, I guess. And while I was there, met some folks, started talking. They're like, hey, you know, we've got something else going down here, University of Cincinnati, called this economy thing. And I'm like, have no idea what it is, but the feeling I got from this group was pretty cool. I'll come back in March, you know, so came back March 2020 and then, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Super cool. Did you have any time off between your retirement from the service and your gig in Alaska?
I did. So this led to what you had alluded to earlier with right. a certain vehicle purchase. Good lead in, by the way. So I am about living life and I've been fortunate enough to make enough where I could save money. But also enjoy life at the same time, because I am not one about necessarily frugality, although I consider myself an optimizer. So I had been lucky enough to make enough where I was able to save some money over my career and live out some of my dreams. And I had a couple Porsches. I'm a car guy throughout my career. And I'm like, you know what? What's a dream? What's this bucket list? What are we going to do? What can you do to enjoy life? And I can't remember if Die with Zero had come out before then or not, but essentially it's like, what's the purpose of all this money? And I'm like, you know, what's my dream? I'm like, well, as a kid, I always play with these little Lamborghinis and Ferraris and yada, 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 whatever. And I'm like, this might be possible. And kind of having an idea of what I might make on the outside when I did retire, looking at finances, the pension, all that kind of stuff. I'm like, I can make this happen. And the plan was never to buy a very expensive car and keep it, right? Literally, it was, I think life is about experiences, right? And I wanted that experience. I wanted to check that box. And I was like, you know, I can get this and let's look at depreciation, this, that, and the other, insurance, yada, yada. All right, I'm going to buy a Lamborghini because I want the experience, right? And I think I had cordoned off like maybe 50 grand or something for this experience. Ended up working out better because it was the pandemic. Not that that was a good thing, but, you know, used car prices were ridiculous. So I was able to actually sell the car for more than I bought it for a year later. But bought this car in Dallas, had it shipped to Ohio. And I'm pretty sure I was the only officer on base driving a Lamborghini Urus, or excuse me, Evo, Huracan Evo around base. And so, of course, the generals knew me and some of the other colonels knew me on base and like, oh, that's the doc. Okay.
Yeah.
Good enough. But there's like, well, we got this car. What do you want to do with it? I'm like, you know what? I'm going to drive the PCH. And initially it started as I was going to start even further north and drive all the way down to San Diego. And that seemed a little ridiculous just time wise and what it would take. But I had a buddy in Cali, or have a buddy who's still out there in the San Francisco Bay Area, ship it to his house and put together essentially a couple week or a week long trip down the PCH. My girlfriend was back in Oceanside at the time. She was able to meet up with me because we made a stop, or I made a stop in Beverly Hills and came out and surprised her. We stayed at a really nice hotel out there, and then I actually stayed in the Oceanside area for like another month, I think, month and a half, something like that, at a fully furnished apartment. So I literally drove the Lambo every day, would go run on the beach, you know, or on the like boardwalk or whatever. Yeah. And it was pretty awesome, right? So that was the time in between starting work in Alaska and actually leaving the military. But I am still processing, right? There is something to be said for what we do at the time, what's important, right? Buying things, buying stuff, having experiences, but then also, I think, mentally being in a place that you want to be, or that you, I never thought I would be where I'm at now, mentally talking about this and thinking about this, but yeah, it was an awesome time between military retirement, starting my post-retirement gig, and yeah, better off for it.
You mentioned you're still processing it.
Yeah.
Can you expand on that? What are you processing?
Yeah.
Just describe.
Yeah. So I would say it's a journey, right? And I think one of the things we talked about at a little F1 get together yesterday, right? I love this quote by, I think it was Jim Carrey, right? Who was like, you know, everybody wants fame and fortune until they have it. And then you're like, oh, that's not, or it just wasn't what you, for me anyway, not that I have fame or fortune, right? But I do think being financially independent is a place that a lot of us strive to get to, because we think we know what it's going to be like once you get there. Like, all of my problems are going to be resolved. No different than like winning the lotto, right? Ah, get 10 million or whatever, million, whatever. Life's going to be great. And you see these stories of people that win all this money and it just goes to shit, right? And that was not my life. However, I really did think, like, once I get here, I have all the money I need. It's just going to be off into the sunset, live, love. It's going to be great. And it is. I do not want to go back. But you are forced to, once you get the financial piece together, you are then forced to work on the mental piece, right? Which is the why, right? And I often compare money to air. It's no different than if you don't have air, nothing else matters, right? It's like, I just need air to breathe. And that's all I need to focus on. And money's the same way. I think, you know, I need money to take care of my kids, to put food on a table, to repair the car, to do whatever. But then once you do have that air, it allows you to think about all the other things that may have broken along the way, right? Because it's like, that was your primary focus. When it's not air or money anymore, well, then why are we here? You know, these questions that you're like, oh yeah, that's a great question, but I'm broke and don't have time to think about that. So that's the journey. So the journey now is this piece of like, who am I and what do I really want? Right. It used to be stuff. And don't get me wrong. Love stuff. I'm a stuff guy, but it's much more experiences. It's definitely people, right? It's why I'm sitting here. You know, one of the things I talk about at Economy, and we talked about this at Economy or just in FI in general, about how this movement was always, or it started off, I think, about money, frugality, and getting to this point of financial independence. And that I think the progression of it is more of this like, hey, who am I? What is life about? What am I going to do with this time I have on earth? And who do I want to spend that time with? And that's kind of the journey. So now it's the people that are most important to me, the friends and people that I have met. I lost a huge community when I retired, right? I didn't lose my military community, but I don't see them every day. I still have friends that we text all the time, right? I will try and maintain those connections. But when you're not in a full 40-hour a week work thing, you don't see the same people. It is very isolating to be outside of something you have known, for me, since I was 17. And how do you deal with that? And it wasn't until this past Economy I left, or probably while I was at Economy, I'm like, wait a minute, this is my community, right? And these are the people I enjoy spending time with. These are the people that I connect with. We have many things in common, even though we may look a little different, right? We have different backgrounds, but most of us care about each other. We care about people. We care about family. We care about all of those things. And it's why I chose to come down here and see Carl and Mindy and hang out with you. And I'm like, these are the folks I want to spend more time with, right? Because it makes me feel whole, makes me feel good.
Yeah, it is kind of interesting. We go to all these things like the Camp Fives and the economies and even FinCon, which is a pretty focused thing for creators, like how to get more downloads for your podcast. And they have very specific things like that. But the past couple times I've been, I don't think I've gone to any of the sessions, or maybe one or two, but just because a friend is in there and I want to support them. So I don't think any of us are going to learn anything from economy. And we might find the keynote's good, the speaker's good, but we're there to reunite with all these old friends and meet new ones. It's pretty interesting. And one other thought I've had, BJ, we talked a little bit about this the other day, like you talked about what your next act is or what you might do. And one of the things I've come to is along these same lines with the community, one thing I want to do with my money is like at economy, we paid for that beer party the first night. I want to rent a castle somewhere and just invite, like, I've got a list. You're on it, BJ.
I'm there.
Probably Scotland, and just invite like everyone over there. Hey, just come out for a week or two. The only rule is you have to say thank you and not give me any money, but just create unique experiences to hang out with fun people. And I don't know, maybe that's all I want out of life from this point on. I'm sure it'll be a little bit more. You need good work and purpose and all that. But yeah, I really like the thought.
I have a list of castles for you.
Shoot it over. I'm looking for a spot.
My girlfriend and I stayed in a castle. She's in school out in England. So we stayed in a castle for a few days 2 weeks ago, and it was absolutely amazing.
Flush toilets?
Toilets flush.
Okay, good.
They allow dogs. We have a little 5-pound long hair chihuahua child. She was welcomed with open arms until she couldn't find mom and started running around the hotel. But that's a whole different discussion.
Scary, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you're right. I thought that was awesome what you did at economy. And I've started to think about, cause my mom has even asked me like, hey, what are you going to do with, I don't have any kids. Right. So like, what's the purpose? What are you going to do with all of this? Right. And I say all of this, like it's this huge number, which you can look at other people that have, you know, multiple millions and you're like, oh, wow, well, they have more than me. But we each have, you know, worked hard to get to where we are. And I think it's important, right? It's going to leave a legacy for someone that's important to you, whether it be children, you know, cousins, nieces, nephews, whatever. Or is it, you know, like die with zero, give it away, or use it for those you care most about, you know? So, yeah, I'm curious to see which castle you choose. Maybe, you know, I can reciprocate later at some other location.
Nice. That's fun. So you're a car guy, you mentioned it a couple times, and it's one of the pieces that the FIRE community, we love to shit on you car guys, right?
Yeah,
It's more, bring it. It's more like, hey, you saw my old truck, right? It's like, it's old. It's like 15 years old. It was cheap then when I bought it, and it's fine. I'm not a car person.
Yeah.
But I understand. So obviously no one really has a beef with you on it, but I think the other thing is, it's like when people buy cars, maybe they get a new BMW every 3 years or something. Like those are the people that I think in air quotes, the FIRE community has an issue with. But you very specifically, you're like, this is my dream car.
Yeah.
I'm going to get it. And then it worked out pretty good. Can you talk about the finances behind it? Obviously you researched it and you had a spreadsheet and you knew how much insurance and gas and maintenance and all that shit. So talk about it.
The purchase itself, you mean for that car?
Yeah. The purchase. And I mean, you don't have to share the exact numbers.
But Yeah. So I had been researching because I had thought about this for a while, right? And I, no different than education, no different than medicine, I've always enjoyed challenging myself for different things and even financial challenges. And that's some of the things I do now is pushing myself to enjoy certain things or try different things. Like, do I have enough money where I could potentially do this? Okay. And I listened to the episode, I'm going to bring you into this, with your wife the other day.
Yeah, yeah.
And she and I are much more aligned with the engineering mindset of how I need numbers to line up. Not that you're not, but I need more, you know, clarity on like how much is the, you know, literally calling, getting quotes on this car for me, you know, for insurance and what are rates and let's look at what this car is sold for from here to here to whatever. So I've been tracking the car, the price of this car for a while. I'm like, okay, you know, as any used car, it should be coming down. It's coming down. And then the pandemic thing happened and car prices started to go back up. And I'm like, this is ridiculous. And so I had a date on when I was going to do some of these things, and I saw the prices turn and start to go back up. I'm like, oh, no. Started calling, and I was like, hey, you know. So forget trying to haggle, because I had a price in my mind what I was going to spend for this thing, and called the place I ultimately ended up buying it from, and they were like, yeah. I was like, hey, you know, can you come down $5,000 on this multi-$100,000 car? And they're like, hey, dude, I got three guys behind you that are willing to pay full price if you don't want it. And I'm like, well, I guess I'm paying full price. And he's like, yeah, you are. So did that. But again, like, this is a huge thing. Like, my first home that I bought in 2001, my first assignment after medical school, was like $125,000, right? This car was more than twice that. You know, yeah. Like, that's ridiculous, right? Like, and coming from a person who I consider myself relatively frugal, I like that word better than cheap. You know, it's like, hey, dude, like, what is the purpose of all this, right? You can be frugal to the day you die, but who cares if you didn't enjoy any of it, you know? And it's like, I can do this. So I, okay. So pulled the trigger, bought that. Then it comes down to, I don't believe in car loans. Right. So I'm like, I've got the money. I could take, you know, been stuff sitting in cash. I'm going to buy a house post retirement. You know, I could use the cash for this. Let me check on loans. And again, this is back in the environment where I got a 1.7 something percent car loan on a exotic multi-$100,000 car. Right. So my plan initially was to, you know, pay the majority of it, maybe take a small loan or something. And I called the bank and they're like, yeah, we can give you a 1.75% loan. And I was like, on how much? And he was like, as much as you want. I was like, are you serious? He was like, yeah. I was like, how about 200,000? And he was like, sure. You need any more than that? And I was like, man, I got to, okay, let me do some numbers. Let me think. Right. And but then it was the same thing. Rates are coming back up a little bit. I'm like, I can earn 3% keeping the money in the bank. And pay. So I'm like, oh, this is easy, the spread.
Yeah.
So I did. I took a loan on half of it and paid cash for the other half, made a little spread. So that piece worked out well. Insurance wasn't that big of a deal. I like gadgets and things. So the car had a radar detector that I had built into the rear view mirror. The display was on there. I put some laser diffusers on the front and back, because not that I would ever speed. However, if I might have trickled over the speed limit by a mile or two, I wouldn't want to get caught. So put those little things on there, and I kept the garage out in San Diego because that's the best place to drive this thing. Yeah. And after a year or after, I was like, hey, this isn't serving me anymore. I'm working in Alaska. I'm living in Maryland or DC, whatever. Looked at selling it, and the price was more than I had paid for it. And I'm like, seriously? You know? And the guy's like, yeah. So I bargained between La Jolla, Lamborghini La Jolla, and this dealer up in Beverly Hills. And they gave me a great price. And there it goes. And my girlfriend was like, are you sure you want to do this? You love this. I'm like, I do. But again, and this gets back to, what is life about? And I'm like, well, it's not about stuff, right? And it was stuff, but it was the experience it brought me. And it was a great experience. Love the pictures. Love telling the stories. But that's now free, right? I don't have to pay for that anymore.
Yeah.
I still got the pictures. So here we are.
Yeah. So amazing. We could talk about all the details of that and some of the other stuff, but we will talk about some of the struggles that you have, because that was essentially your dream car, right?
You were yeah, definitely. Okay. Definitely.
So we'll talk a little bit about that. But first, we do have a sponsor, and that is Ghostbed, our friends over at Ghostbed. So this is amazing. We've had, or Carl and Mindy have had the bed over there for a little while, but they didn't test it out. But BJ, you stayed in their guest quarters.
Awesome.
And what was it like? How'd you sleep last night? Tell us all about it.
So I was not sure what to expect. And I'm not a person to, I typically stay in hotels, right? I feel like I'm putting someone out by staying at their home. I know you have your own routine. I don't want you to change anything. I just want to spend time with you. I don't want to be a burden, right? And, but someone else was like, hey, they really enjoy having people, you know, and I'd ask Crum and he's like, yeah, dude, definitely. I was like, okay, well, let me try it. So took my bags down there, got in, sat on the bed last night, and it was a little stiff. I'm like, I like my luxurious Tempur-Pedic with the foam stuff and whatever. And I sat down on this bed and I was like, I don't know about this. it was a little more firm than I typically like. But I've been having some back pain actually. And then went to sleep last night, worked a night shift before coming in, woke up this morning and I was like, that was awesome. So literally it was one night, right? But it was, I'm just being honest, like, you know, take it for what it's worth.
And you're a doctor. No, sorry. You're saying that as a casual sleeper, not as a doctor.
I am saying that as a casual sleeper. That I woke up really refreshed. Whether it was the margaritas I had last night, but it was great.
That's cool. Yeah, good to hear. And I'm sure we'll chop it up so it makes it sound like it's a doctor endorsement. But we're just kidding. It's all entertainment, folks. By the way, this whole thing's entertainment. So one question. So did you wake up with Carl standing over you? Like, because I've roomed with him a couple of times. So I'm just curious if he does that to everybody.
That would be no. No.
You just didn't wake up.
I did not wake up. I did not see him until this morning. And we were both headed off to the gym, right, heading out the door.
All right. BJ is a very sound sleeper. It was odd with us because I'm looking at you and then you woke up and I didn't expect that. It was like 3:30 in the morning and we're locking eyes and you were confused. I think you thought it was a nightmare. I'm like, no, Doug, this is real.
I was like, Georgie, is that you? What is going on?
Weird. You're like, I'm never rooming with you again. And we almost, the podcast almost ended. But no, it's all good. I promise not to do that anymore.
Thank you. It's hard not to. Well, that's good to hear. I'm glad you enjoyed the bed.
It's nice.
And we actually, Carl and I both have, they have like a new sleep, like a mattress topper kind of thing.
Yeah.
And excited to try that out. It has like massaging things and heat and some other stuff. So it looks like a cool way to upgrade a bed. Carl, do you have anything else?
No, just that I'll throw it out there. BJ, you're staying with us for another night.
Yeah.
We can hook you up with that special vibrating mattress topper.
Let's do it.
See what that does for
you. Let's do it. Let's do it. Something new. I'm all about new experiences.
Do you have any quarter? No, I'm just kidding. It doesn't take quarters.
Yeah, you just swipe. Yeah, we've upgraded it to like a square little card reader. All right, GhostBed is family owned with 20 plus years of experience and over 60,000 five-star reviews.
Patented sleep cooling and tech.
GhostBed has a 101-night at-home sleep trial and 20-plus-year warranty. So you can head over to ghostbed.com/milehighfi or use the code milehighfi for 50% off. So, like we were saying, you basically got your dream car. And, I mean, people run into this, whatever it is, but very specifically... Mm-hmm. Once you reach your goals, what do you do after? Because then you're sort of left with like, well, what do I go to next? So when did you realize you were at that point where you're like, well, I love cars, but I don't know what car to get next because I got my dream car?
Yeah. So I've always been a Porsche guy and ended up falling back. I said, fall, that sounds so horrible. Falling back into my just normal, you know. Regular Porsche. No, I ended up, and Carl and I were talking about this earlier. All my cars have been silver, always silver. So I ended up buying a silver 911 Porsche that I rarely drive now. But similar to things we've talked about, and I will credit Doc G with this or Jordan for many discussions that we have had about, and he talks about this and I love his approach and we may talk more about this later, but it's about the dopamine hit, right? So a lot of the things we do that give us pleasure are just that, but they're short lived. And I don't know, I guess the Lamborghini was a short lived dopamine hit, although I still feel like I enjoy it now, but it's the next thing, right? It's like, well, what's the next? Do I need to get a bigger and better and whatever? And in all honesty, I don't feel like I need that. Although the Porsche is kind of like maybe an attempt to do it, but it's just like, this is what I do. I've always had a sports car, so why get another one? I've got a buddy of mine who is like an absolute Porsche fanatic. Love him. And I kind of listened and I'm like, oh yeah, I need another one. And I bought it and I haven't driven it hardly at all, you know? Mm. So that's not it. But I think the bigger thing, we talked about this earlier, is what is the next thing, right? Like whatever your dream is a car or buying a home, your dream home, whatever it is that the end? And I'm like, well, no, it's not. It's great to achieve those things. And I feel blessed to have been able to live that dream. You know, I think a lot of people will never have that or even the opportunity. So I, like, again, I don't want to be disrespectful from that respect, from that point. However, that's not what it's about, you know, and back to like the Jim Carrey thing, it's like, I don't necessarily need that, you know, mm-hmm. like, because everyone's like, oh, what's the next one you're going to buy? You're going to buy a new this, that. And it's nice because I think we live vicariously through others. And some of my friends have lived vicariously through me on some of these things. But that's what they are. And again, I like things. I like shiny things. That's a piece of who I am. And I'm okay with it. But that's not who I am. You know, so the next thing, what, and in a lot of ways, that is the journey, right? It's the journey of what truly makes me happy. How to live this life the best I can. So when, and this is in Jordan's first book, Taking Stock, it pulls some from, I think it was Bronnie Ware's The Five Regrets of the Dying, right? And I actually have a picture of it in my kitchen of those five regrets, right? And I think one of the ones on there is I live the life true to myself, right? But the difficulty in that is, what is that? Right? I mean, yeah. You can get all ethereal and like you, like, I can go on this retreat and like be silent with myself and just listen to the voice, and nothing wrong with that. Right? I think everybody's got their own journey they go on. Right. And this is where I think initially I heard that stuff and I'm like, what the hell is that? You know, I don't know. I have no idea. Sure. You guys do all the new agey stuff. I'm gonna go buy some more stuff and be happy. Right. but that's not really what it is. And I'm like, oh shit, I think there is more that I need to look at inside me, right? So, I mean, I started therapy. The problem with starting therapy is I went in the room and didn't even know what to ask, right? Like, why am I here? Like, what are we even going to work on? And the journey over the last 2 years in some way has been trying to figure out what is that thing that I need to work on for me. And I mean, it's different for each person, but that's the next journey for me. And there's books like The Second Mountain and I, like, is it like I need to go do something with my life? Well, yeah, I have no idea what that looks like. You know, are you going to help me start a podcast? Am I going to do this, my own thing? Am I going to do a blog? Even though, God forbid, if I had to write anything, I'm really happy I don't. I look at pictures all day as a, you know, post-fi job, and I don't even write. I kind of talk into a mic and the thing writes it out for me. You know, I might correct with a couple buttons. But yeah, I think the dream in some ways is always changing. And I love that, right? And the biggest piece about the next thing, right? And I'm going to backtrack real quick. And I can't remember where this came from, but whatever what it took for me to get here will not get me there, kind of thing. So all the frugality and money saving things and things I gave up, right? Like my first Porsche, I worked at least 3 weeks straight sometimes, because I'd work in the military Monday to Friday, and then I had a secondary job at a different hospital. I'd go work Saturday, Sunday nights. I would drive back at night, get back home. This is when I was in Delaware. I would get back home like at 2 in the morning, maybe 3 in the morning, and then go to work at 7, right? And then work all week and then do it again to make extra money on the weekends, to also save, to, you know, invest, all those kind of things. And it's fun, not funny, but we all had our own path. But I think sometimes people will look at people who have reached FI and be like, oh, must be nice. Like, you didn't sacrifice for it, right? There are people who, okay, win lotteries, get inheritances, whatever, but that is not the majority of people, right? We have all worked really hard to get to where we are. And again, be very blessed in most cases to even have this discussion, mm-hmm. you know, because again, a lot of folks don't have air, right? Don't have the money to even sit and have these ethereal discussions about what do I really want out of life? Oh, chime some music or some bowl with water in it and somebody, you know, making that noise. Yeah, but that the next thing is, it's not a car, right? So there's no more Lamborghini. Is it the Porsche? I don't know. Probably sell it, right? Girlfriend moves in, that'll probably be gone because I need a second space in the garage anyway. Yeah, who knows, right? It might be, but I know what it does include, right? It does include you guys, right? It includes, you know, a bunch of other friends I've met from economy, from Diana to Jackie to Bill to, you know, I mean, just a bunch of people, mm-hmm. right? Jordan, Allison, whatever. And like, I feel like I'm taking things from people sometimes, and this is like my own personal issue, and not realizing sometimes what you're giving to people when you do some of these things, right? Like, no, people really want to spend time with me, right? Like, I actually have something to offer in that sense. And we share experiences. Like, and you realize these things you do post-fi, which can be volunteering or whatever, you know, you're giving to people, but at the same time, you get so much in return. And I know it sounds, that's the stuff I hear sometimes. I'm like, yeah, okay, whatever. But it's really true, you know? So that's what's next, right? So post-dream attainment of Lambo, it's figuring out who BJ really is, mm-hmm. right? What does BJ really want? And what's going to make BJ really happy? So not a Lambo, sorry.
You mentioned just the dopamine aspect. And I'm curious, I don't know if you're like big on social media and have like that dopamine thing going on. And I'll throw it over to Carr real quick, because we're not going to talk about the retreat that you went on, but you were essentially without your phone or internet for like 1 week, right? So your dopamine levels probably went way down. Is that accurate? Or what do you think?
What do you mean? Like by general happiness or?
No, just like, you know, you have the urge to like pick up your phone and you're like, oh, do I have a new notification? Like that sort of like really low level bullshit dopamine from social media or Twitter or whatever you're fucking around with on your phone.
Yeah.
That stuff.
Oh yeah. Super calmer. The day the retreat ended, I'm like, man, I love a phone-free world. Like, phones suck and I hate them. And I had that thought before, but that reinforced it 10 times over.
Gotcha. So that said, have you done any... So you said you like stuff, and I know for me, like I have a couple guitars laying around.
Yeah.
Like I really love researching them and like figuring it out and then like which one. And then you like read all these reviews and watch whatever, hundreds of videos. So...
Yep.
Part of the dopamine is the search portion of it. And then once you get it, you're like, that wasn't actually, I liked looking for it more than I liked having it. So have you experienced that? Or did you take breaks from like, just like, I'm not going to buy shit. I'm just going to like try to reach a baseline.
Yeah. So having known, and I agree with you that, you know, like, oh, having it's not as good as the research. I'm going to tell you, the Lamborghini was better. I'm just being honest, right? We're like, oh, it was a letdown. No, it was not a letdown. I mean,
that one was
I told this before, but I used to go when I was stationed out in Arizona, I would go to the Lamborghini dealer up in Scottsdale and just ask for the keys. And I've been there so much. I'm like, can I just have the keys? Like, yeah. And they knew I wasn't going anywhere. I would just jump in the car, turn it on and listen to it. Yeah. Right? Because there was like, oh, I just love the engine. And when I bought it, I would do the same thing.
Yeah.
I would just jump in it and turn it on and listen to it. Right? And yeah, it's stuff, but it's also, for me, realization of all the shit I have done over the last 30 years to get here. And not alone. Like, my mom, amazing woman. Right? My family, amazing people. Right? Most supportive. And I think I took that for granted until... until you meet other folks and see their journey and things they've gone through. But I have not had that necessary letdown per se with the dopamine hit. But I just, it's like, check, you know, got it. I would still love to have the Lamborghini. It just doesn't make sense in my life. And it's not necessarily financial. It's like just having one of those on the East Coast, I think is just different from my perspective. Don't.
Yeah.
Don't need it. But I don't know what I still research stuff, right? I don't jump on social media. I'll jump on Facebook more to catch up with friends. I'm here in Colorado and I'm going to swing down to Sea Springs, probably try and catch up with a few friends down there that I have not seen in like 20 years since I was at the Academy, that kind of a thing. But that's social media to me. Okay. I do not have a blog. I do not have a presence, so to speak.
Got it. Okay. Well, one thing, let's circle back to the military portion and how the military potentially, there's a lot of tools and a lot of benefits, but a lot of people don't take advantage of it.
Oh, yeah.
So can you lay out some of the main benefits so people have an understanding of like the scope? Because when you were telling me yesterday, it's alarming how much stuff, which well-deserved, of course, but it's just like people don't realize how much.
Yeah. There are lots of opportunities afforded to members of the military. I will say this. I do think a good number of us that join the military, similar to people who join or go into medicine, right? I do think it takes a love of country and a love of your fellow individual, man, woman, to serve your country. But I don't know if I necessarily had that at 17. I will definitely say, over my 4 years at the Academy here in Colorado, I developed that because you learn so much about the history of the Air Force and country and all of those things. And you're like, man, this is really cool, you know, that this is what it means to me when I put my uniform on. And I think a lot it's hard to really say I had that before I came in. I don't think I had it before I came in. Definitely developed it after being in for a few years. I'm like, man, this is really great. And then you start to learn about other things that are provided to members of the military. Like I said, my parents were retirees, so I saw the pension piece, right? I saw the healthcare piece, which most of us 30 years ago weren't like, oh yeah, gotta have that healthcare. Like when I joined, who thought healthcare would cost what it costs now? It was not even on my radar, but great benefit now, right? So you can post-retirement pay for TRICARE, which is significantly cheaper than what it would cost on the open market or even for some employers with high deductibles and HSAs and all those kind of things, right? So the healthcare piece, huge, huge benefit. The pension piece. People get pensions from other jobs, but ours is actually inflation adjusted, right? Awesome. And things happen to us after you stay in the military for 10, 20, 30 years, right? So there's also a disability component that can come along with that, right? And one of the things I think we encourage and not encourage enough is that people speak, report all of their medical issues. And it's a hard sell because when you're in the military, you definitely want to, you know, appear like, hey, I'm tough. I can take anything, right? And that is kind of the mentality of a lot of folks. I don't want to, you know, I'm not that person that goes to the hospital that gets, I just scrape myself or whatever. The downside is that when you retire, all those things get looked at, right? Like, hey, how did we as the military break you? We're not going to compensate you for that in a form of disability check or a tax-free portion of your pension. And I think it's important. Some people, even when they get out, like, I'm still tough. I don't need anything. And they don't, you know? And I think it's important that people do that because there are certain benefits for not just you, right? But your family members, your spouse, your kids can get additional educational benefits to include stipends and such at certain levels, 70, 80, 90, 100% disability, other things kind of kick in. Each state is unique on what VA benefits they provide to veterans, disabled veterans in particular. And then depending upon your level of disability, you'll be entitled to certain benefits from that. And I think it's really important for military members to realize that is not something someone is just giving to you. Like that is something you have earned, right? And for folks who have never been in the military, don't understand because they're like, oh, you know, yeah, I guess it's kind of hard. You work 20 years, now you get a pension. And I'm like, yeah, you didn't just work 20 years, right? I mean, you missed a lot of Christmases. You had to move places that you had to sell. And I was single the whole time. I didn't have a wife and kids. And I've talked to folks that had a spouse and children. And I'm like, I don't know how you did it, right? Like some of the places you had to go, and I say had to go, right? Because you still owe time. And the military said, you're going. And you can choose to leave your family in one location and go by yourself. But again, you know, you had to go. So I say members have earned this, but people just, or some members don't feel like they want to be that guy or that girl that says, yes, I was broken, right? But I do encourage folks to, hey, when you, on the way out, tell people what happened, document before you get out so you can be compensated for that because you have earned it, right? It wasn't something they're just giving to you. So that's one thing. In the military, most of us join the military, or I shouldn't say this, I'm speaking for myself. I've met a lot of people, I'll put it that way, that we came from less than upper income households, right? Even for myself, right? I asked my mom in high school, hey, what does my college fund look like? You know, and she was like, well, I hope you get scholarships. And I'm like, well, that makes it pretty easy. And I did, I got scholarships, but you know, I think the Academy offered something unique, but a good number of members enlisted because they came out of high school and maybe needed some more guidance and or direction, a better word. And they found that, you know, in the military and we stay in, but a lot of us came from those backgrounds. So I didn't learn about mutual funds or investing until I was at the Academy and one of my classmates showed me a mutual fund prospectus. And I was like, I don't know what a mutual fund is or a prospectus. And he's like, just put money in this stuff and someone does something with it and they give you more money back. And I'm like, perfect, I'll do it. You know, and there was no internet back then. You mail a $25, $50 check in to Janus Funds or whoever. And I'm like, this thing kind of works. And then we kind of stumble your way through it. But the military itself, in some ways, has these things available for people to learn, but you sometimes have to go out and reach to make it happen. There's a month called Military Saves, where literally within the military, we will try and different commanders and organizations will try and push the importance of financial stability or security. I won't say financial independence, per se, but education, financial literacy, right? And we had some great things when I was out in Arizona for that. And there's opportunities to learn, right? One thing in particular that somebody told me about, which I used to be a Dave Ramsey person, love Dave, right? For the getting out of debt piece. But I did not have credit cards for a long time because it's like heresy. They can't, don't, no, no credit cards, nothing, you know? And then one of my airmen, when I was in command, came into me because I was signing all of his leave slips. And he was, I knew what he made because he was enlisted, and he was taking all these great trips. And I'm like, how are you paying for all these great trips? And he's like, points. And I'm like, that can't be true. Dave has told me that doesn't work, you know? And he actually sat down with me and showed me, you know, hey, when you're a military member, most of these card companies, Amex, Chase, Capital One, they won't charge you annual fees. So your $700 fee for your platinum card is zero. You know, your Chase Sapphire Reserve, your annual fee is zero, but you still get your $300 travel credit. You still get your access to the Centurion Lounge. You still get all this stuff for zero. And I'm like, word? Okay, I'm doing that. You know, and then that actually turned into, I started teaching other members of the military, like credit cards. So, I mean, there's just so many things that, that people in the military are privy to, and rightfully so. I think a lot of people, a lot of Americans appreciate the service and things we do and give us, you know, some of these benefits as a thanks. Right. So I'm like, hey, but you got another there, you know,
a couple tax benefits too. Can you highlight a few of those?
Definitely. So I have been, the majority of my career, I was a resident of Texas, right? No matter where I lived, because Texas had no state income tax. And it wasn't until I retired and realized how important that was. I'm like, oh yeah, it's just a little tax, whatever. I don't have to pay a state income tax. But essentially, when you're a member of the military, not that you get to choose what state you're a resident of, but essentially, if you've been stationed there, you have intent to go back, which is essentially what you're saying, when you maintain your residency in a state, you are allowed to maintain the status of being a resident of that state, right? So lots of military members are residents of Alaska, Texas, Florida, okay. New Hampshire, you know, pick a state, in Nevada, right? Mm-hmm. And you don't, so yeah, you don't have to, you know, pay income tax from that part. Also, a lot of the like housing allowances are tax-free, right? You don't pay tax on those things. So there are lots of benefits that military members can get that are not subject to state or federal tax.
Got it. Any other benefits that you could think of that we haven't covered yet, just to nail them all?
On the military side?
Mm-hmm.
I do have to think about that.
Okay. It's okay. Just wanted to make sure. All right. So it sounds like there are ways that people in the military can learn the benefits, but I guess they just don't know the impact. Like you said, you weren't thinking about health insurance 30 years ago, but it turns out like huge benefit.
Huge.
And then you add up each one of these little benefits, it compounds over years and you end up with something huge. But is there another way that like you or we can help educate and let people know like, hey, like you're set up really well. How can that information get out more? Do you know?
Coming to a city near you. No. So one of the things I have always said, so when I was active duty, I used to teach and I used to make it mandatory for all my airmen that worked under me when I was in command to attend my financial briefing. Right. And when I retired, folks were like, hey, you know, you should do that. And I've always had this desire to specifically reach out to that community from which I came from, to reach back and continue to serve. There are, but in some ways I feel like there are things that are out there that a lot of folks in the military don't already know, like Military Dollar, right? There's a different sites and current podcasts. All of us know Doug Nordman, right? Who, and I forgot the name of his book, although I bought it and read it. But there are lots of things for military members, FI community-ish, right, that have a lot of those principles and ways of using what's available to us as military members. So, I would. It's not literally, if you Google military financial independence, I think a lot of these things come up, right? But you have to at least jump into the wormhole, or at least. But it's so much easier now, right? It's a Google search than you know plugging through Smart Money, Kiplinger, Money Magazine, a bunch of stuff back in the day.
Cool. I have one question for you, BJ. This is a follow-up to something we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
You're financially independent, but you went back to work. I'm curious. Let's say you had whatever your net worth is. It was like 50x what it is. Would you still continue to work?
Yeah.
At that point, you're doing it for free, which you kind of are now, but maybe not on the same magnitude.
Yeah. We had this discussion the other day, and I have this discussion with myself all the time when I'm working and something pisses me off. Right? It's like, why am I here? Right? Is it the money? And don't get me wrong, I like getting a check, right? It's someone said I did a good job to me. Yeah, it's like, hey, you did so good, we're going to give you this, right? And it's X times more than what the military was going to pay you. So for me to be like, oh, it's not that important, that's a lie, right? But I do sit there and I'm like, what number would it take for me to do this forever, right? Or is it even a number? Is it tied to money? And I don't know. Like that, I think that's part of where I'm at the moment, right? It's kind of like, yeah, it allows me to do some things like go stay in the castle or something, you know, have some great experiences, right? And do some things with my family and friends, like, you know, come here, you know? Yeah, I don't know what that number would need to be, but it's not about money at this point, but I'd be lying if I said I don't like it. Like for that to go away for me would be, you know, it's in some ways it's who I am, right? I'm like, I don't know how to separate that. But I'm sure at some point, I said I was going to work in this job for 2 years and I've been here 2.5 now, right? But in some ways it's not about the money, right? Like I enjoy the interactions I have with other providers. I enjoy, you know, finding a diagnosis that I know some other doctors have looked at a CT scan or looked at an X-ray and just didn't see, right? And I know that my intervention or my assistance helped a patient, right, get better sooner or just get better, right, or not die. Or that patient's now going to the OR because I saw free air or because I saw something that should not be there. Or, you know, I saw something that was cancer that if I hadn't made the diagnosis wouldn't get found for another few months and maybe it'd be terminal. You know, like, that's not a money thing, right? And it's a service that I feel like, hey, I've trained and put a lot of time in to hone my skills and I provide that service despite whatever the money is. Now, I try and flip it and say, would I do it for free? Right? That is a different question that I have not answered. if I could not have some of the hassles and do it at my own pace, the problem is it becomes work, right? Like sometimes when you've got like three traumas that hit all at the same time and you want to do a great job and it's really hard to scan and look at everything in a short time frame because everyone is like, hey, we need results now. We can take care of these patients. It becomes work, you know, and there's value in that. I mean, it's no different than people criticize folks in the FI community for hitting financial independence, starting a podcast and now getting money for it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's you're doing something, you're providing a service, right? And in some ways, not to get something for that, you're saying, does that mean there's no value in it? And I don't think that's the case at all, right? I think it comes down to like, well, what is that value and how do you want to quantify that? So I don't know. At some point, I will step away. I would like to step back. I think if I could just do, I work nights now, which gets to be a bit much at my age. Like, not that I'm, you know, I'm younger than Carl, so... not that old, but what is the next, you know, what does it look like going forward? I don't know, but I'm still enjoying it, right? So, and at some point, if something really pisses me off, you know, then I'll walk away, right? Like, I don't have to do this, you know? I know that have to when I owed the military years, right? Like, I could not leave, and I had a really bad experience at one point and asked a JAG, this is the lawyer in the military, like, hey, I signed this contract, I still owe years, but what I'm going through right now is absolute bullshit and that's not how people should be treated. And they're like, I'm sorry, like, you signed this like, I know what that feels like, and that's not where I'm at now. It's a great feeling not to be there, but I enjoy the people I work with. I enjoy what earning a salary allows me to do. I would be lying if I said I don't enjoy seeing my net worth grow. Mm-hmm. Right? Especially is like, man, this is amazing. Someone said this compound interest thing works and look, it does, you know? So we'll see. More to follow, but yeah. I'm sure I will step away at some point or change things. One of the things Jordan said, and I don't know if it's in Taking Stock or what Doc G had said about creating the life you want to live. And one of the things he did was, you know, take the job you have and carve out the pieces or the things you don't like. And I feel like I've done a great job in carving out a lot of the things I don't like. Working nights is probably one of them. But the stress of like traumas that come in, like I kind of enjoy that actually. So I don't know. We'll see.
And I think the big thing, probably with you too, I mean, there's an inconvenience of like the travel and then working nights, but it's the time, right? So like the obviously, like you're still figuring out the money. Would you do it for free? But I mean, the podcast takes time.
Exactly.
Traveling takes time. There's inconvenience. So it's just like the opportunity cost of being able to do something else, not specifically the money, because, you know, for this show, we're not earning that much, for example. But it makes sense. It makes sense. Carl, what do you think? Your question, if you had whatever 50 times your net worth, would you do anything different? You're obviously not working, you know, a W-2 job, but.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think life would pretty much be exactly what it looks like now. And part of that is because we have kids. So maybe when they're out of the house, life would look a little bit different, but there's not that many. The knobs we can turn in life are restricted. We're not going to live in Thailand for 2 months because we want our kids to be in the public school. And I hate being a teacher. I'm shitty at it. Therefore, we're restricted in what we could do. Maybe my answer would change a little bit after they're out. But right now, nothing would change.
You know what? I'll get back on track in a second. I had an idea. Carl, you mentioned a couple episodes back, you're like, oh, I would love to eat more protein and the diet. You should get, like, not a private chef, but like a meal planner, and just like, Carl, here's exactly what you need to eat, and here it's in boxes for each day. And it probably would be less expensive than what you think. And then you wouldn't have to like cook all the meals and have separate stuff like Mindy preparing or whatever, because you don't cook too much, right?
No, I'm not good at that either. So
have you looked at getting like meal plans like that or something?
We have, like, through Mindy's show, she's had them sponsor, and we've had like HelloFresh.
No, not that. Not okay. Because then you still have to fucking cook the whole thing, and it's a big, but just like someone comes and they like deliver food, and it's like 8 ounce chicken breast, broccoli, and rice, or whatever you need, where it's like you just take it from the refrigerator, heat it up, and that's it.
Okay. Are there services that actually do this? Or
Yeah. I think a lot of bodybuilder type folks You know, have you gotten this before?
Yeah. I looked into it. Okay. And because I looked at it, I was like, you know what? The carving out things I don't like to do. Like, I love to eat, don't like to cook. Thus enters my girlfriend. But there are services where you can, like, certain grams of protein per meal or whatever, and they will deliver them every so often, right? Like, I want, you know, these types of greens or this type of carb or this. And a lot of times it's for bodybuilders or like people who are doing fitness competitions or who are literally monitoring all these things. But yeah, that's one way of approaching it. You can also, like, you can hire a personal chef, right? And it's not like they live in your house or something, but it's like, hey, come to my house once a week and cook for me, right? And you can pay for all the stuff and like cook and like pre-make all these meals for you and like leave them. Like, I think some professional basketball players or football players would do these kind of things, right? Mm-hmm. Because they're not going to necessarily have time or make time to cook. So
yeah.
Have you considered that?
I should do that.
No, I have not. I didn't know these. I guess I heard Chris Hutchins, I think he has someone come in and do that for him. But no, I've never thought about that. But sounds like a good idea. I think one thing about that too is it could expand. Well, for one, it eliminates the hassle of cooking and all that, which I don't like, but it could expand your food horizons. Like, we've had people stay over. They're like, I want to make this for you. I'm like, holy shit, that's great. And I never would have had this before.
And you could actually like get someone to do the shopping too. Actually, I'm like, I got a business idea. I'll go over to Costco, get you a hot dog, bring that over. But then I can get a bunch of food, cook it. And then, I'll just be on your payroll or something.
Yeah, I see where you're going with this, Doug. This is all about you. You'll bring over. Like, Doug, why have we had like hot dogs for 6 weeks in a row? Like, it's I want like, something
you love
else.
Hot dogs. And,
you'll mix up with the chicken bake from Costco once a week.
Okay. So I think we're coming towards the end. We can go on for many hours, and I think we're going to hang out after this. Couple last questions here. I'll do one, double check with Carl, and then ask the final question. throughout this whole conversation and in chatting with you, you seem to be a lifelong learner. Like you've jumped from different subjects, from the, you know, you saw the financial report and the prospectus and you were like, what's that? You're always like, what's that? You want to learn all about it and then deeply analyze it. What are you learning now? Like, what's new on the horizon or coming up in the next couple of years? You're like, I got a little interest in this and I don't know anything about it.
Squishy stuff, right? I think it gets back to the, you know, the not numbers based. So at Economy, you know, we have a bunch of discussions and like one of the discussions was like, hey, you know, this right here, right? I think those of us that are on the path of FI and post FI is like, what's the next thing? I'm like, yeah. So what do I start researching? You know, the squishy stuff is looking inside, right? Like I think it was very easy to look outside and not blame the world for things that are happening or why my life is the way it is. But I think now having the time to do the work, right? Which at first I was like, that's stupid. That's like some Freudian. That's not real, right? But then I sit with it for a minute, like, damn, I think it's right. I think it's right. I think I might need to work on me. And I think that's what's next, right? So actually making the time to do that. So a natural inclination for me, if I have free time, is I can jump and look at cars all day. I still love cars. It's not a, like, I just like what's new, right? And we can sit and talk about all the things that, you know, autonomous driving and a Model Y can do for you, you know, or what, you know, oh, it turned too late or too early, you know, whatever. Like I still enjoy that stuff, right? Or those types of digging into it. But I think it truly is trying to better understand, you know, the me, like the stuff that's inside. And I mean, I'm always going to find things that I like to follow a little wormhole because I've got some ADHD and like squirrel, what? It's flashy light, you know, whatever, what's happening. But yeah, that's, I think next is work on me. And it's hard. I think it's not where my natural inclination is. My natural inclination is to, you know, I feel uncomfortable. Let me look at my net worth for a second. Okay, I feel good. Like, oh, what's that? Apple did what and reported and went up 10%? Okay, that's great. Doesn't really move the needle. None of it matters. Like, really. Like, okay, so you've got X amount more. It goes to the net worth question, right? Like, it's not going to impact what gets you there, right? It was what I would do before and was important to get me here. But as I sit and really focus on what gets me there, and there being contentment, is that the right word? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, actually, that leads me to a follow-up. So, BJ, in like 5 years, if we do another interview, like how do you want to describe yourself in 5 years? If you're like, I worked on some stuff.
Yeah.
And here's the result, and I'm happy with that. What would that be like?
This is where I'd be like, oh, this is corny. I lived a life true to myself, right? I didn't feel a need to, I didn't feel a need to please someone else, right? Or do things because I think society thinks I'm supposed to, you know, and we haven't touched on this at all. I'll touch on it briefly, right? I think we as individuals look at ourselves, either what society tells us or our friends or family told us that we thought we were supposed to be and things we thought we were supposed to do, right? I did not necessarily where I came from was a middle income family with a mother and father who were both military officers who retired. That's my truth. That is my past. However, somewhere in there, I still came out like saying, hey, I am the only, and this is not true, but I'm just saying like this, I am the only black radiologist, you know, whatever in the Air Force, right? Like I need to be a role model for this group or for these individuals, which I still believe. Right. But I think it's how I go about doing those things that's important. Right. That I still focus on young black men. I think there's some unique things that we experience in this world, specifically in America, given our history here, and how that impacts us and our ability to move forward or move through the world and be successful. But that does not have to be at the exclusion of everyone else, right? So I think by teaching finances, by doing these things, and by individuals that look like me seeing me, because I know the impacts it had on me when I saw like Jackie at Economy, or you know Kirsten, or you know different people. You're like, man, and I know I've had this discussion with other women in the space where like, hey, we see other women. You see Diana on stage leading this thing, right? Like, is she doing it only for women? No, right? But I think those types of things, you know, it always helps, you know, when I see that I can be that person, I can do these things. So what I anticipate, and we'll see, is that I will get more active in the space somehow that it doesn't feel like work, right? Because those things that I just talked to you about are important to me. They were important to me in the military. They're still important to me now. And how can I do those things, impact those people that I care about, that I know could benefit from what I have to say and what I have to contribute? And it's still going to be a little bit of work, but how can I do that the way I want to, because I choose? And hopefully, you know, 5 years from now, we look back and be like, hey, man, you made a difference. Mm-hmm. That's about it.
Ooh, I think you should give a talk at Economy. You laugh. I'm serious. I'm gonna ping Diana right after this and say, I have a speaker for you.
Oh, man.
His name is BJ, March 2025.
To be continued.
You're
but on. But yeah, that is the, you know, that's what it's all about, you know.
Do you have any other questions, Carl?
No, just are you good to speak at Economy? That's my final question.
Next question.
So, yes.
All right. So final question here. What does a perfect day look like? And you can give us a series of days because I know you might be on vacation sometime. You may be on, you know, just your normal routine back in DC or whatever. But yeah, you can lay out a couple scenarios of a perfect day for you.
Every day? Like a perfect day is every day. And every time I get up and complain about anything, and I did this when I was in the military, is like, what do I have to complain about? Right? I mean, What was I watching? Oh, I know what it was. It was the Berkshire Hathaway stockholders. It was an annual meeting or whatever, like a couple days ago, right? And I think someone had asked Warren Buffett a question, you know, and I don't even remember what the question was, right? But his answer essentially was like, you know how lucky we are to be alive at this time, be in this country, right? And having traveled as much as I travel and you see, you know, people who are not as fortunate, right? I was really surprised when I went to India and I saw a lot of the poverty and I was like, wow, this is, you know, there's lots of wealth too, but the disparity was huge. And I hope that we never see that here in our country. But a perfect day is waking up every day. And I mean, I love going to the gym. That's awesome. A great coffee in the morning, if I don't have my workout drink or something, that's awesome. Probably switching from my K-cup to Nespresso. But as much as my girlfriend drinks, I'll be spending $100 a day on that stuff. That would be a perfect day. Seeing some people, spending time like with you guys, with people I truly care about, reconnecting with people and you know, putting something in the world that is meaningful. Right. And not just to myself. Like, it's not, I mean, one of the things Dave Ramsey used to say was like, you know, you can have all the money and eat all the lobster in the world, but at a certain point it tastes like soap. Right. And it's like, you can have all the money and buy all the Lamborghinis and watches and all that. Right. But then that's the stuff piece. Right. So what I've truly started to enjoy in my perfect day is just that, right? Like being around good people, getting a good night's rest. I like a nice bourbon now, which we were talking about. So, you know, distilleries in Kentucky are awesome. Getting a good workout. I was going to say working in some way, shape or form, but that's the contribution piece, right? Is it a podcast for me? I don't know. Is it just talking to somebody on the phone, my cousin, a good friend, giving some words of wisdom or like, hey, you're going through a rough time. My friend who lives here just had her hips replaced. And that's where I was planning on going yesterday, but she's really having some difficulty with that. So I'm going to give her some space and maybe just swing through before I leave. But yeah, any way I can help And at the end of the day, when I do this now, right? You lay down, it's like, take account of the day you just had. And it's like, well, how was my day? You know, it's like, it was awesome. Right. And mm-hmm. I feel I do that most days. Like, it's just awesome. Like not having to do, and this is the financial independence piece, is not having to do anything you don't, or I don't want to do. Now there's things I don't want to do that I do because I know other people want that thing. Right. Like, right. My mom was like, am I going to see my baby today? I'm like, Mom, I'm tired. You don't have time for your mother. I'm like, I will be there for dinner. What time would you like me to come over? Right. And then I feel guilty because I'm like, what if she wasn't here tomorrow?
Yeah.
Right. How would I feel about not have taken that time? I was just going to sit on the couch and watch Netflix anyway.
Does she live close by?
That's the main reason I live where I live.
Yeah.
Because everybody's like, you retired and moved to DC?
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah. Because when I retired, I was like, what's life about? Right. And I've always said, oh, it's about people. It's about friends and family. Right. But then when you stop and look at your actions, is that really what people do? Like, you say your life is about these things, but when you stop and look at what you've done, is it really? I moved back to the East Coast to be close to her. I'm an only child. And my mom's remarried, but my dad has passed. And being in the military and being stationed all over the world, I missed a lot of things, right? So I'm working in Alaska next week, flying back a day early to make it to my cousin's wedding. I literally will land from a red eye, grab my suit, change, and drive down to Virginia. But that's, so I live close to her for that reason. I missed a lot of things with her, and now that my dad's gone, really am honored and blessed to spend as much time as I can with her. Awesome person. All my friends love her. So... But yeah, that's, and my friends are out there. And now I got friends out here, right? Mm-hmm. The Longmont crew.
Yeah, so, I told you there's a house for sale across the street, back. Man. So
that's the perfect day. Yeah, perfect day.
That sounds like an awesome set of days. Yeah, so you are not on social. People might see you at an event somewhere or something like that, but largely you're unreachable.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm on Facebook and I've got... a bunch of friends in the FI community on Facebook. And I would never say there's someone I don't want to meet or talk to. And if I can be, helpful to anybody, and this is like, it's funny, an economy, even at the mixer that Carl and Mindy paid for the first night out there, there are people that came up to me. It's like, are you BJ? I'm like, yeah. Oh, so-and-so told me to come talk to you. And I'm like, really? Like,
yeah.
Why? Like, I don't, but I mean, this is me, right? Like, I'm energetic. I'm happy. I love talking to people. If there's any way I can help anyone with anything about military stuff, about finances, I mean, I have a passion, for what, for minorities and our success and how we move through the world and, how we can best, care for ourselves and our families, which I think gets left out sometimes in the discussion. I'm on Facebook. Okay. And I think I have an Instagram because my girlfriend wanted to show me something or something. So I had to jump. I really have no idea, any of that stuff.
All right.
Yeah. So that's probably the best way.
Well, we'll link up as appropriate. And if people have mutual friends, they can
find me. They can find you.
Or as a keynote speaker at Economy 2025.
Yeah, definitely.
BJ. Very good. Thanks, BJ. This is awesome.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the show. That was the Mile High Five podcast. And I'm Doug Cunnington, the Balder host, and Carl Jensen is the cool, sexy one. If you dig the show, please do three things for us. Number one, tell a friend, a family member, an enemy about the show. We really don't care who you tell. Maybe forward them a specific show that you know that they will like. It's the single most helpful thing that you can do to spread the word. It's like giving us a virtual high five, and actually we don't give high fives in person, so the virtual kind's pretty good. And more importantly, your friend or family member or even your enemy will appreciate the fact that you were thinking of them. Number two, make sure you're following or subscribed on your podcast app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, YouTube, whatever you're using, and that way you won't miss a show. And number three, please leave us a rating and review. We read them on the show occasionally, and you might hear yours out there on an upcoming episode. Quick disclaimer, this show is not financial or legal advice. I'd actually be surprised if it sounded like it. It's really just for entertainment, and that's at least what we're hoping for. But seriously, get advice from professionals. Carl and I are just two guys with microphones that sit in my basement and talk. So we'll catch y'all next week. So you're visiting Longmont right now. You stayed in your routine and you went to the gym today. So how was it? What was it like there? Where'd you go? What kind of workout was it?
Awesome. Today was a Planet Fitness day, as most gym days are. So as much as I travel now, post-military retirement, there's a Planet Fitness pretty much in any city I end up in. Canada, Toronto, DC, wherever. So there's actually two of them here in Longmont. So swung by the Planet Fitness, got a good, you know, hour and a half workout in, which is so much nicer to go post, you know, the morning folks and afternoon folks. And the sweet spot, I think, is like, what, 9, 8, 9 or so. Yeah. And Planet Fitness has all the same equipment at most of the gym. So you can, you know, have a very standardized workout, which I, being military, like standardized things in my day. So yeah, it was awesome. So feel great. And
all right.
Yeah, happy to be here.
So what's the workout? What'd you do today?
Well, today was, so it always starts out with a little bit of a run. So on cardio, ab and shoulder days, it's more of a 3 mile, like a 5K, 3.1 something mile run. And then today is more of a run to warm up. So half a mile to a mile. So today was a mile, and then back and buys, and then, you know, feel like doing something else, add that in. But yeah, that was today. So today was
nice.
Was back and yeah, just felt great. And yeah.
Carl, you worked out too, right?
I did.
What'd you do?
I felt super lethargic. I did not sleep well last night, so I was supposed to do my weight exercise, but I didn't feel like I could make the most of it. So I just did a bunch of cardio stuff. I did a half hour of walking, carrying weights, and then a half hour on the treadmill at like a 4 incline or 4.5 incline.
All right. Cool. I haven't worked out today. I usually walk the dog. So I walked Georgie a couple miles this morning. And then I have found at our rec center where Carl works out too, basically it's empty between like 11:30 and 2 or so. And there's a lot of seniors that work out in in that pocket that you're talking about, like 9:30.
Exactly.
So I went in there a couple times and it's like a zoo. It's very crowded in there. It's too many people, too many machines packed in. Like if someone's doing a leg extension, like it's hard to walk by. Like there's just legs and elbows flying everywhere. But midday, around lunchtime, ghost town in there. So I'll try to go in there around that time. And I'm not sure. I was going to say, like, you had a couple of drinks yesterday, right?
Yes.
Is that what screwed up your sleep?
I think so. It was early in the afternoon, though. They had worked their way out of my system by bedtime, so I don't know what was going on. But I noticed my heart rate went up, and I actually read about it this morning. And we have BJ here who might be able to comment, given his background. But I was reading how alcohol increases your cortisol, and I know my heart rate spiked. It always spikes at night after I drink. So then I wake up multiple times, and I've been sleeping great lately. It's just alcohol is no good for sleep.
Mm-hmm. See, so you should have slept on the ghost bed. Yeah. And you would have had a much more successful or meaningful sleep, rest.
You have to check it out tonight, though.
Yeah.
All right.